Hey there, this is Seth Varas from Channel 9 coming to you from Cambridge, Massachusetts Microsoft office, where there's a whole floor devoted to data scientists or data science, and there's tons of data scientists here. I thought we would talk to some of them. I have a special guest here today. Tell us who you are and what you do, bud.
My name is John Erlinger. I'm a data scientist in the ADS office in Boston, and I develop machine learning methods for our customers.
So I thought we would talk about sort of an overview of how you should even think about the whole data science process. Is there like a series of steps? Is there a formal way to do this? What do you say?
Yeah, there are quite a few formal processes that data scientists can use. Often we don't, right? Everybody has one internally, but you don't always use the formal one.
Sure.
And so what we've developed is sort of a 7-step process that we can communicate with our customers, manage their expectations so they know how the process is going to work.
Sure.
So the first step in any of these processes is not give me your data and I'll tell you something about it. It's always you define the question. So we're going to say step one is define the objective, right? And we want a sharp question that machine learning can answer. And there are only 5 types of machine learning questions that we can answer. The first one is how much or how many, and we answer those with regression models. The second one is, you know, there are a set of classes that an object should belong to, and tell me which class does this object belong to. That's categorical
classification.
Right? Thank you. The third one is, you may not know how many classes there are, but you want to find out from your data, are there different groups, and which group does mine belong to? And that's the clustering methods. The fourth is this weird, right? And so we're going to look for these anomaly detections. That's like fraud detection and those types of things.
Sure.
The fifth one is, which option should I take? And so those are the recommender systems, okay? So once we have what the question is, then we go to the data, right? And the first step in the data part is identify sources. So where is the data? And you know, remember that we're going to find the data that's going to answer my question,
right?
So I'm going to find out where it is. So it may be sitting in a SQL database. It may be somewhere else in some blob storage. It may just be I've got an Excel spreadsheet of this data. Okay, and the important part of identifying this data is you want to make sure that it's relevant to the question, and you want to make sure that it's an accurate measure of what you're asking about, okay?
Sure.
Once I know what the sources are, then the third step is I'm going to start to do data exploration. So this is where we go ahead and start to show pictures of what we've got in the data. So quite often, observations are taken over time. You know, there may be, if you're going to follow taxi cabs, you may want to know how far your taxi cab has driven on every day. So you're going to get all of these measures, and you're going to try and figure out, you know, do I have a continuous measure of time? Do I have outliers, and what am I going to do with those? Do they match what everybody else is doing? So we generate a lot of pictures about the data, and we haven't really done any real machine learning yet.
Mm-hmm.
We're just looking at the data. So this is counting things and finding out what's in there.
Is it true that you could get to the data exploration step and answer the sharp question?
Depending on how the question is phrased,
yeah,
it's entirely possible that you could end here without doing any machine learning.
I see.
There's a lot of information that comes out of just looking at your data. You can find a lot of business things about looking at your data. You can find that some airplanes might not fly on certain days for whatever reason, or they may be, you know, the lemon of the fleet, whatnot. But once you get to this point, so then the next step is to start thinking more carefully about your machine learning. And this is where we build our analysis data set. So analysis data set, this is where if my data comes in columns of variables, features in columns, this is where I start to build out which columns I want to have do machine learning on. Which ones are going to inform me about my objective? So if I'm interested in a pump, some module of a car, or a module within some other machine. So if I'm interested in, say, the engine, then getting variables about the tires may not really help me answer the question about my engine, okay?
But it might be in your data source.
Certainly, it could be, depending on how many sensors you have, anything. You could get tire temperature, or you know how you have the sensor that tells you when your air pressure is low in one of your tires. That might not help me answer my question. So the analysis data set is where I build my features, I do feature engineering, and they're focused on on what the question is. So I'm continually thinking about this question as I move through the process.
So before we go there, when we have our data sources and we've done the exploration, you're saying that there is only a subset of the data that we're going to be using in the analysis data.
Very possibly.
Is there ever a case where you're going to augment the data that you already have?
Certainly. So oftentimes you get somewhere in here and you find out that you don't have a very important piece of information that you need to answer your question, in which case you may have to go back and define a new source, okay? So maybe somebody has a report that's in an Excel spreadsheet that would be really helpful in telling me what my response is, and the response is what I'm trying to predict. So in which case then I'm gonna go back here, back, you know, just kind of loop in. So I'll find a new source, and once I find a new source, then I have to do a little bit more data exploration to find out, is that source accurate? Is it complete? Is it going to contribute to my objective question?
And so I'm feeling like with these loopbacks that you are almost expecting not necessarily failure, but you're going to expect challenges all along the way that's going to cause you to go back.
Right.
So for example, you might get to this point and you might get to this point and realize that question really isn't sharp enough.
Right.
You might realize that I need to do a little more exploration to figure out what my features are going to be, or I need more data. So you're going to go back all the time.
Right. It's a science process, right? Data science. So when we're talking about a science, it's always continual discovery. So you define your question, which kind of guides your direction. You have a hypothesis, right? And then you start to test it. And we're going to test it by finding the data and exploring it. At this point, we've decided, well, it was a good hypothesis, but we need a little bit more information in order to really answer it. So then you go back and find some more data and explore it. Okay, now I think I got enough that I can start to build a model. So then I'm going to move to an analysis data set.
I see.
And I start to think about, okay, so now if I want to build a model, my hypothesis is that tire temperature does affect it. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. I need to build that into my analysis data set. This is also where I look at if you have outliers in some things, like you have something that continually runs too hot, you know that there's a problem with it and it should have been addressed, you found it in your data exploration, in the analysis data set you may exclude that one because it's going to skew your results in some way.
So here's another question. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I always have these questions about sort of data, but the data that I've seen is almost always like it should be part of like the Dirty Jobs show, because the data just, there's missing values, there's people put stuff in the wrong fields.
Right.
Where does that stuff get fixed? Is it in this step or in the analysis data set?
So you find missingness, you find bad data, you find these wrong field things in your data exploration. And I like to use graphics a lot. And when I do, they usually stick out. There's been times where I have a year's worth of data and I found out I was missing data from 1 month. You know, you have 10,000, 15,000 observations,
right.
and until you actually visualize the dates of that, you don't know that there's a month that's just completely missing.
So then you go back.
You go back and say, okay, where is that? Oh, well, we have that over here. And then, so then you can fill that
in.
Got
it.
Okay.
Perfect.
Going to analysis data set. Now, once you have that, all the rest of this is just data work. The next step is actual doing the machine learning. And this is where all the magic happens, okay? You know your question, so you know what method you're going to use, right? You know if it's going to be a regression, classification, whatever. This is where you're going to do that. This step is typically, you know, I've done probably 80% of the work getting to an analysis data set. Then this step is really fast. But sometimes you have to watch out. This is where I find out about something called leakage. And leakage is when you have a feature that is almost identical to the response, which is what you're trying to predict. So if I'm going to try and predict the weight of a specific type of patient. It's entirely possible that that's my Y value, my response. If for some reason I have weight in one of my features, that feature may be extremely powerful in predicting the weight that I'm trying to get. So you can see these things in the machine learning, that all of a sudden weight is extremely important in the prediction of weight. And nothing else really contributes. And so you look at these things and you say, wait a second, I can tell because I'm getting 90% efficiency or 95 or 99% efficiency that my model is probably too good to be true. So why is that? And then you go back and you look and you find that, oh, I'm using weight to predict weight, so I should pull that first one out and change which features I'm using in my analysis data set and then redo the machine learning model.
So two observations that are interesting. I've found that when I'm doing machine learning, if I'm getting 100% accuracy, something's wrong.
Yep.
Yeah, usually in every other field, you're just like, oh, great, 100%, you're great. But 100% usually means that we have leakage or there's overfitting. The other observation I have is that sort of brings to mind, as you said, if I'm using weight to predict weight, that's almost cheating.
Yeah.
But what if you have BMI? That is also going to leak sort of your answer.
So BMI, body mass index, is weight divided by height, right? And so that is strongly linearly correlated in the same direction as weight. So you should get, BMI should do really well at predicting weight. Oftentimes, that one's known, right? You know that that's weight divided by height. But there's lots of other variables, especially in medicine, where they're combinations of things. And as a data scientist, I don't necessarily know that that's exactly what I'm trying to predict until I look at the output from my machine learning method and say, oh, wow, something looks too good to be true, in which case it almost certainly is.
Yeah. So what is a good range of success for a model? I guess maybe there's more steps. Let's go to the more steps.
So one of the things that I neglected here is when I build my analysis data set, I split that data into a test set and a training set, right? And so this is to get to your overfitting problem. If I train my machine learning model on one set of data, and then I try and determine what my accuracy is on that same data, that's when we get overfitting. You get really good results. So when I split it into training and test, then I train it on the training set and I test it on the test set. And that is basically trying to get some idea of how well the model will do on observations that it's never seen before.
I see.
Okay. So training and test is done here. The next step is what we call our validation step. So this is where we may hold out another set of data. If you have a lot of data, it's not too bad to do. But if you're constrained on how many things you have, it's kind of difficult. So you have a test set and a training set here. But this set has to go through the same analysis data set process to get it in the right shape for the machine learning. But this is another set where the customer says, OK, this is like, you know, the next 3 months worth of data we have. How does your model do? And you compare that. And so you get a whole another validation. This is also where the customer would kind of say, yeah, you know, this is doing exactly what he said. It seems to be answering the objective question reasonably well. And we'd like to take this into the final step, which is production. So this is production is where we actually use our model. So this is when we build our web services or put it into some sort of a pipeline. Mm-hmm. But that's, you know, so we've got a valid model. Everything looks really good, and we're going to start getting new data in, and we put it into production. But again, this is data science, right? And so maybe when we get down to the validation set and we put it into production, in the process of this, we come up with a whole new set of questions, right? Because that's what science does, is every time you answer one question, you uncover four or five more. So at any point, we can be going back and forth across all of this. The other thing that I like to talk about this is each one of these steps is basically a communication point. So this is when I can generate a document that's a contract that says, this is the question I'm going to answer for you. This is where my data sources are. This is where, you know, this is what I see in your data, okay? Then I build an analysis data set, and from there I get, okay, so every time I get new data from your processes, I have to put it into this set of SQL queries or feature engineering steps. The model is what we're going to actually set there so that we can bring in new data through the features and rebuild the model and get some new prediction. and then validation. And oftentimes, as these things move on, you know, you get another 3 months, you get another 6 months, a year's worth of data, the validation may start to creep as the process changes, in which case then we have to go back and say, okay, can we retrain this model and do all of that as well?
That's interesting that you mention, because the way you mentioned it, because I feel like as you're saying this, there's like a deliverable that could be given at each of these points.
Right.
So I understand the deliverable here, right? It's a question, sharp question that's going to say, is this a classification problem? Is it a regression problem? Is it a clustering problem? Is it, you know, all the things. Identify data sources is pretty clear. Like, tell us where your data is, and there's a list. Well, we have it here. It's a SQL Server. Then there's this weird file, that a DBF file from DBase4 a long time ago. This, we'll get back to this. This makes sense. This is the shape of the data. These are the models we're using. Does it do well or not? And then we put it out. What does the deliverable look like for this? Right?
So basically, we come up with a data. I come up with a data report where I'm going to show you what's in your data sources. So I'm going to try and say, how complete is your data? Do you have enough data? Do you have enough failures in order for me to predict failures in the future? Right. And so it's a lot about just identifying what's actually in your data set. How many observations do you have? Over what period of time? Are they dense through that whole period of time? Or is it just there's like two or three way out here that those are probably not part of the data set, so we're going to ignore them. And then as you move through the process, okay, suddenly we have a really big dense block here, so I'm going to include those. And you get all of that information by just going in there and digging through the data, getting your hands dirty, finding out what values are reasonable, what aren't. That type of thing.
And you made an interesting observation that, for example, if failure is rare in your data set, you could make an ML model always guess non-failure and do really well.
Right, right. So that's, yeah, I can get 90% efficiency if I only have 1% failures. I can get 100% efficiency because, or 99% efficiency if you have 1% failures, because you just say everything's always not failing and then you're only wrong 1% of the time.
And in the data exploration step, that will bear out.
Right, exactly. And then there are methods that we can use to augment that, right? So we can oversample the failures or we can undersample the non-failures in order to do that. But you still have issues where you have to have enough failures, you know, 10 failures or 100 failures, probably isn't enough to tell you very much. You typically need about 10 failures per feature that you're going to use in your model. So 100, you're starting to get to the modeling crossover limits, point where you can, okay, so now I can start to build a reasonable model as opposed to, I can only come up with one variable that's going to predict a failure. Isn't going to really be helpful.
So another question that I have regarding the data part is, how much data do you need to even begin to have this thing start to work reasonably? Like, I mean, if you have like a spreadsheet of 10 years worth of data and there's only 100 lines, that seems like it's not enough.
It depends.
Does it depend on the question?
It depends on the question. It depends on you know, what do you call production, right? If you're just doing machine learning to find out things, which is not the way most people do it, if you're just like investigating. So there's two ways you can use machine learning. You can use it to find out what the process is doing, or you can use it to predict. Right, and as machine learners and computer scientists, we tend to want to predict the future.
Sure.
So if you have 100 lines and you're not going to get a whole lot of new lines frequently, then going into this production where every time I get a new one, I'm going to predict what it's going to do is not necessarily an efficient way to move forward. But I have seen in hospitals, you have rare events, rare diseases and stuff, and so that's all you have, but you want to try and figure out, okay, so when this patient presents, do they have it? And so you have to predict whether or not they have it given the information you have. And so you can do things with small data, but that's where in the data exploration you have to define what is enough. And it's not like there's an equation, it's more of a I'll know it when I see it, because
sure.
I'm a scientist and I've explained or I've seen these things, I have that kind of experience. But a lot depends on the question and the response you're looking for.
When it comes to someone that is interested in doing this process and getting a feel for it, you mentioned the word experience. You sort of get a feel for what you're looking for and what you're looking at. How long does it take to get that sort of innate sort of feeling about these things?
Well, like anything, right? The more you do it, the better you get.
Right.
You know, and I've heard the 10,000 hours, but basically you kind of jump in and try things, and it's nice to have a mentor who can then tell you, hey, yeah, this looks really good, but you know, you missed this one over here and stuff. And that was one of the things that, you know, experts are experts. One of the advantages of machine learning is that they kind of quantify some things that some expert may miss, right? Because you're balancing hundreds of variables in your head.
Right.
We're not very good at that. Machine learning can do that as long as you're kind of have an idea of, you are meeting your assumptions is basically the way.
And then the last thing I want to bring out is it seems like throughout the whole process, you need to expect not necessarily failure, but you need to expect a lot of bumps along the way and you need to expect to go back.
Right, right. So we set this up in kind of almost a waterfall type approach because customers like to see, well, where are we in the process? But then we couch that by saying, this is still going to be iterative. Data science is always iterative. And you may get down to validation and find out you're close, but oh, we have a new data source that may help us get better. And so then you move back up to here. We've had customers where we get through the whole process and we get to the model and we find out that, okay, I have a model, but it's really bad. And the reason why it's really bad is because we don't have enough failures. If you leave this go for another 6 months, we might get enough failures that we can improve this enough to move forward.
Yeah, I mean, I love the word, when people say I've got it down to a science, I feel like that they're not thinking about what science is. It feels like it's a glorified process of guess and check.
Right.
And what we've done is we've formalized where we're doing the guess. And obviously when I say guess, that discounts a lot of experience that data scientists have. It's not a guess, it's an educated sort of inference that they're making or guess, and then they're gonna check on that.
Right,
as well.
Right.
This is awesome. So is this written down somewhere we can go look at it?
Right, there's a TechNet blog that has all of this and we'll
make sure to put a link underneath. Well, this has been really helpful because I think it's, for me, it's helped solidify. I've explained stuff like this before, but I've always sort of not necessarily discounted this, but I've only sort of grouped this all together. I like how you segregated the parts to a more distinct sort of flavor. You know, it's not just about data, cleaning, modeling, and production. There's some other steps involved that I really like how you laid it out. Thanks so much.
Sure.
Thanks so much for spending some time with us. Again, we're here at the Cambridge offices learning all about data science. My name is Seth Juarez, Channel 9. We'll see you next time. Take care.